Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking to Mr. Derek White. He is the partner and director of business development at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Beryllium InfoSec Collaborative. They're based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Derek, thanks for your time this afternoon. Let's go and get started, please.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we looked up your bio, did some snooping up on you on LinkedIn and Google. You've got a great background in InfoSec, cybersecurity, global supply chain solutions. Can you tell us some of the brief highlights of your career, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a big fan of talking about myself too much, but I had a handful of years back in global supply chain, really understanding where the risks lie within a product or a business, trying to grow and evolve and make great things for the economy. And that stemmed over to the security world, information and cybersecurity world, going from a global third-party logistics firm to a smaller boutique information security firm. The mindset really doesn't change. It's about solving problems and using collaboration to do so. And since then, it's been another handful of years in the security world, and that's the mentality, and that's how things are getting done.
Okay, excellent. Is there anything else more you'd like to expand on, or?
I've got stories for days. I could talk forever on some of the great things that, and then some of the scary things that have happened within solving problems in the industry. But I think it's just worth highlighting that collaboration is why things get done, and third parties and subject matter expertise is a very big thing to me.
Excellent. Now, how did you venture into Beryllium InfoSec, and how did you create this company, and how did you get the name Beryllium InfoSec? Because I know Beryllium's the name of an element, on the periodic table of elements. How did you get that name?
That's a good story. So I am one of the equity partners and one of the founders of the business. Beryllium is a unique name, and a couple of years ago when we started the company, we were kind of rebranding from some of the work that we were all doing collectively as part of other security solutions and security work, and we were looking at creative name. We have a strong portfolio in the Department of Defense contractor space, and honestly, one of the people that leads our marketing just started coming up with ways to name a business around collaboration. And in fact, the collaborative part of our name didn't even get put into it right away. It was Beryllium, as you said, it's an element. It's a unique element. It's actually a more useful element when applied to other things. So in like the security world, we always joke and say, Beryllium's used for all different types of things, but it's not usually that great by itself. And that can be said about security, but also about Beryllium. It's also hazardous if handled incorrectly, which also can be made endless jokes about the security world as well. So we stuck with it. It's a unique name. Of course, manufacturers in the DoD space are very familiar with it, and it just stuck.
Oh, well, excellent. Now, how long have you been in business? How long has Beryllium been around?
We're coming up on our two-year anniversary of being Beryllium InfoSec Collaborative. That'll be here in about a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks. And before that, we had a different name and kind of went through a little acquisition. But officially, we'll be into our third year in April.
Excellent. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Now, who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it now that you're based? Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, from our previous conversations, you do a lot of work in the DC area as well. Are you trying to target like the bigger companies, like the Fortune 100, 200, the SMBs, or the government sectors like the DoD? Who is your typical customer base, and who are you trying to target?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we do have a niche, and our target is specifically small to medium-sized businesses. We do work with large businesses as well, but the way that we approach information security and cybersecurity is modeled around how small businesses need to attack protecting information. And that it really comes down to a lot of the stuff that we do in our mindset around understanding a business. There's not a lot of people that are out there helping small businesses because it's not sexy. There's not enough money in it, quote unquote. We do work all over the country. We do have, as you mentioned, a very unique solution and a spot in the DoD supply chain for small business contractors. And that's where our target is because, it's like I said early on, it's about fixing problems, and we happen to fix a pretty cool problem that has to do with our national security, and I think a lot of people can get behind the reasons why that's fun.
Yeah, excellent. Now, let's get into your product and service line. You have a broad array of categories here. You have information security risk assessments and NIST-based compliance, secure environment architecture, red team, penetration testing, social engineering, education, training, and awareness, which I think is very important, as well as policy, procedure, and writing. Can you elaborate more on these services, and how do your customers make use of all of these?
We are at true to our core, we are an information security consulting firm. That is, and we don't say cybersecurity because this is about information. Cybersecurity is a thing, but we really take the information security approach. So, yes, NIST is our Bible. We are a NIST expertise shop, and oftentimes most things are mapping back to the NIST framework in one way or another. But we're not big believers in having a business try to mature their security by just picking a popular framework and trying to attest to it. If there are certain things that don't fit their organization and don't apply to certain frameworks, then their progress or their completion plan or their percentage of compliance and implementation is going to be low. And that's not good for an effective message to the stakeholders of a business, for example. So we do multiple different ways of security, not just assessing. We have obviously a very important piece to build an effective plan. You have to understand where to start, and a lot of that comes with data flows and where is critical information for your business stored, where is it processed, who has access to it, and that comes through really understanding the business but also getting into a more assessment methodology around understanding stuff. Now, you mentioned that you think awareness, InfoSec training and awareness is a big deal, and it absolutely is. You hear it all the time, people are the strongest and weakest link in an organization. So the attacks that you read about, the breaches you read about are from attacks that are very simple. They're tricking people into giving up information. There's very few attacks that you read about that are just, James Bond and all this kind of crazy espionage stuff. It happens. But training and awareness is a great place to start. It keeps people aware. You understand, what do I do if something happens? But really the full circle in security in our world is understanding, being trained and being aware, being vigilant, but really getting stuff into place. When I say stuff, we're talking about whether it's requirement-driven, but really implementation. Get security solutions in place that make the most sense for your business at a cost-effective way of doing it, and then test for effectiveness. That's the red team and offensive security side you mentioned with penetration testing and social engineering. What good is a security program if Johnny or Susie let someone through the front door, right? So test it. You know that your people are doing good work. Show it off. Have attack vectors that are happening out in today's world. Pay somebody to be the bad guy and find out if you missed any little areas and then fix them. That's how things get from basic to good to great. And a lot of people want to just become a great cybersecurity, information security, mature company overnight. It doesn't work that way. So you have to be, I always kind of say, you have to be good before you can be great. You can't just go from basic to great overnight. So that's what we spend a lot of our time doing.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I noticed on your website, I'm looking at that right now, that you have services in the vCISO area. I know for a lot of other security or cybersecurity firms, they offer that service. What makes you different from the other people that offer a vCISO service?
Yeah, so VCISO is a virtual chief information security officer, and it is kind of a buzz term in the industry now. It's loosely used, unfortunately, at times. But essentially what it is if done correctly, it is exactly what the acronym stands for. A chief information security officer is a very demanding and high demand job, very critical job to a lot of businesses. Now, a 10-person company probably doesn't need to pay $150,000 or more for a chief information security officer. But the security function in a business is different than an IT function in a business. They have to work together. But the IT person or people or solution shouldn't also be doing the security work, because it's like grading your own paper. If I took a trigonometry test today, I probably wouldn't do as well as I did in high school, but I'm probably not going to score myself at an F, right? So give people the opportunity to prove their work. So when we stand in as a virtual chief information security officer or a VCISO role, we don't just do that out of nowhere. It comes with planning. It comes with, you know, whether an assessment's been done or needs to be done. Our goal with that role is that we don't want to just tell you how your progress is going. We want to help you do it. Not necessarily with our hands, because we're not going to overstep our function as a security role, but, you know, assigning people to tasks. Like, okay, so we have the next month we want to accomplish these goals. Let's figure out what those goals are. What makes the most sense from a resources and expenses and time driven reality? Let's focus on these tasks. Who's going to do what? When we come back in a month, or we get on the phone in a month and we review the progress, let's hope that everybody has their stuff done. If they don't, because they're busy, which, as you can imagine, happens all the time in our industry, then who do we need to assign to that role to make sure that your program and your maturity is always moving forward? We have a big problem in our business with being complacent and having a false sense of security. So, and that's not really a fault of anybody's. It's just that technology advanced before security was in the mindset. So we make sure that our clients and us and managed service providers and technology solutions are held accountable, because the stuff has to not just get into place, it has to be managed and it has to stay in place so that simple attacks don't take down a business and get their critical information.
Okay. I've also noticed that you, on your website, you're doing work with the GDPR. Have you done anything with the California Consumer Privacy Act, the CCPA, quite yet, or that's something that you're still kind of exploring into?
Yeah.
Or?
Yep, good question. So we have done some GDPR work. Again, when something of that magnitude gets announced in our market, in our realm of security, a lot of people become experts overnight. So, because it has to be done, it's a mandate, right? It's a law. And with GDPR, I think a lot of people saw that, and maybe even with the CCPA, and every state now looks like they're going to have their own laws in which to abide by. It seems like it's a money grab right away. Like, oh, you know what? If people aren't following the rules, and I'm doing business with here and there, I'm gonna file a lawsuit against this law. Probably some truth to that in some manner, but at the end of the day, data privacy is a big deal. It was not something that most people thought about, obviously, given how the growth of social media platforms just went crazy within the last 10 years. But everything we do is driven by our data now. The CCPA, we have some light engagements in that. We're kind of, based on what we learned on the GDPR space, there was a lot of heat and a lot of fire, but not a lot of people with accountability. It really comes down to legal stuff. I mean, it comes down to making sure that you understand your business and you have policy and procedure in place. And you, again, back to what we talked about at the beginning of the interview here, is understanding where your critical information is, who your customers are, where you're storing it, what solutions you're using, et cetera, et cetera. So we're monitoring it. We're spending a lot of our time with a different type of certification, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit here. But we're doing some of that work. We just we want to see some of it play out a little bit before we dive headfirst into it.
Okay. As a writer in the security, cybersecurity realm, you know, I come across a lot of news headlines about contractors and the Department of Defense making, you know, putting more stringent security requirements on them.
Mm-hmm.
What's Beryllium's involvement with that? And can you tell us more about the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, or the CMMC, that's going to be now applicable to defense contractors?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a definite change in landscape for the cyber defense, cybersecurity, Department of Defense supply chain world. So, the thing is, it seems like because it's a new certification, there wasn't really a certification process before, that it's more stringent, right? It's more strict. There's more stuff, and that's not necessarily true. The requirements that DoD contractors have to follow, and it's called the DFARS 252.204-7012 clause, has been around for a few years. And what that clause essentially said is, if you do work with the Department of Defense and handle our information, you're going to protect it by following this clause, the DFARS 7012 clause, by implementing the NIST 800-171 controls. And that's a subset of a popular framework, NIST 800-53. And there's 110 things you have to put into place to protect this information. And that was built on a trust model. And a trust model was essentially a flow-down requirement that said, hey, I'm buying stuff from you. I'm putting this in the clause because you handle information. Please do this. Are you doing it? And the answer was, yeah, I'm aware of it. I'm working on it. And there wasn't really any sheriff on the road when it came to actually completing that work. And so, as you have mentioned in the news, there's a lot of cyber warfare stories that are coming to the, I wouldn't even say the mainstream media yet, because I don't think it gets enough attention, but there's some crazy stuff going on. We are under a massive attack. We have been for over a decade, and we're losing our competitive advantage. So the DoD came out with a certification, as you mentioned, Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, also known as the CMMC, and it is the DoD's way of verifying that DoD contractors, both big and small, within the supply chain, are getting these requirements done. So what that means is, if you want business from the DoD, and they're starting with new contracts this year, at the end of the year, a select few, like 10 or so, they're going to require that you have a certification in place. So you're going to have to not only get the work done at whatever level you are looking at business at, which for most people is going to be right in the middle. It's a 1 through 5 model. So level 3 is going to be a spot where a lot of people need to be. That is the NIST 800-171 controls I just mentioned. And there is no way for DoD to verify. And as a taxpayer, that should upset people that there was no way to verify, because companies could just do whatever they wanted, so to speak. So that has been a huge change in the last 8 months. It's been announced. It became an official thing at the end of January. And there's still some work to do on how those audits are going to look and how a third party is going to certify somebody. But at the end of the day, it's proof. And it is a big deal. And we need to get our competitive advantage back from our adversaries. There's $600 billion worth of intellectual property that's leaving the United States every year. That doesn't make me happy as a taxpayer. I'm sure it doesn't make many people listening to this very happy. I know it doesn't make the DoD happy and those that are in charge of the CMMC. So this program is out, and it's going to work, and it's a way to mature our supply chain of the Department of Defense. Simple as that.
Well, okay, excellent answer. Now, is the CMMC going to expand to other industries as well, too?
Yeah, so great question. And yes, it is a DoD-specific certification model right now. It will likely, and this has been openly talked about, expand into the federal space. There are other countries paying very close attention, those that we are allies with specifically, that are monitoring this very closely because they understand the importance of it. They want to see it work before they then require their own industry to adopt it as well. So yes, it will. Now, it looked the exact same. No, not necessarily, but a maturity model is set in place for this exact reason. You know, it's to take people from basic or not really paying attention or getting complacent, like I said, and being forced to mature because we have to. And these threats that we're facing, whether you're in the DoD supply chain or you're a healthcare organization or you're at home on your couch, they're evolving because technology advances, threats advance, our defenses have to advance too. We can't use 1995 tactics on this, but we don't have to go up into the, you know, crazy artificial intelligence space either and start thinking that everything has to be so robust. It's really stick to the basics. Make sure that you're taking care of the low hanging fruit. And like I said, become good first before you become great, and mature your hygiene, your cyber hygiene, as you go through this stuff. That's what they're asking us to do. And we should be doing that as a nation anyway, on anything that we're doing when we're trying to protect information.
Okay, excellent. Now, Derek, an area of for small businesses that seem to be kind of hard for them to get a grasp on is actually trying to figure out what their security requirements are to begin with. And this can obviously only be done by doing a comprehensive risk analysis. But again, they don't even, you know, they have a hard time even, I guess, trying to understand what a risk analysis is to begin with. So it's kind of like a dog chasing its tail. So is there too much noise out there for these SMBs to find companies like yours that can help them figure all this stuff out and to eventually help them fortify their lines of defenses?
Absolutely. That is a major problem for sure in the cyberspace, air quotes there. It's an issue. There's a lot of softwares. There's a lot of technology. You know, the way you market your services now to the consumer is different than it used to be. You don't open a phone book anymore. You have to go on, you know, Google or rely on trusted partners to really get good feedback. And that's where small businesses seem to struggle, right? Who do I go to? How do I know if someone is a trusted source or not? And there are associations and there's groups. We work with a ton. We're trying to get the right message out, not just to DoD-related work, but really any type of security, whether it's framework-driven or it's just data privacy. But what are the right solutions? And it's hard for small businesses. A lot of businesses develop their solution with the idea that they're going to sell it to an enterprise business because that sounds cool and that makes a lot of money. And then when they realize that that's a lot harder to do, they try to scale back and come down to what is affordable for a small business, and they're delusional. It's not a good – small businesses don't have time and resources to pay big box prices. So it is a huge deal, and we like I said, you have to align with the right resources. That's why we put collaborative in our name, is because we aren't going to have a problem saying, you know what, John's company over here does awesome stuff. It's in security. It's in our same kind of wheelhouse, but they solve this problem, and Cindy's company over here solves this problem, and Bill's company over here solves that problem. Work with them if you need to. You know what I mean? We don't get paid to say that kind of stuff, but we care about protecting information, and we're never going to just say, we can't tell you who to do because it takes away from our credibility. That's not our job. Our job is to solve problems, and if that means we have to collaborate with other people who are great at what they do and they have awesome solutions, then that's what the small businesses need. They need that trust and that verification that this stuff is working and that people care about them, not just about how much they make on their bottom line.
Okay. Derek, another issue is that, you know, here in the United States, my view is, and again, this is my personal view, I'm not expressing it on part of others, is that we live in a very reactive society, meaning we don't actually act on an issue until it impacts us. And here in cybersecurity, we always have that mentality, oh, it's not going to happen to us. You know, we keep hearing about all these headlines, you know, that this has been hacked, this has been breached, you know, and whatsoever, but SMBs, corporate America, we just still don't seem to get to take a more proactive mindset to actually, you know, try to mitigate that risk. Now, obviously, anybody is at risk, right? I mean, nobody can ever be 100% immune from a cyber attacker, but how come we, as a society, we can't do much more than what we're doing now to be more proactive to mitigate those risks? What's going on in our mindset?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. That's well said. The I'm too small, I'm not a target, the mentality of they know everything about me anyway. I don't really care, is what people say until something happens. And businesses are the same way. I'll pay attention to it when I have to. And that has shifted. That's gotten better over the last couple of years. But I mean, that's the nature of everybody nowadays, right? Is we're all busy. We've got different things to worry about. But what's really big on the education side, and we spend pretty much half the time of what we're doing, no matter what engagement we're doing with our clients, is educating in some fashion. So multi-factor authentication, for example, it is a long acronym, MFA, or sometimes called two-factor authentication. People think that's, I don't understand what that means. If you just pause and think about it for 2 seconds, it's an extra step to verify that you are who you are. And banks have been doing this for a long time. Credit cards have been doing it. When I say a long time, I'm talking about they build a vault in the bottom of their bank years ago when money was physical, right? They put a vault in place to protect your money, and then they put controls around who gets to go into the vault, how accessible the vault is, right? It's no different now with information. We used to lock file cabinets in a room with a key that only two people got keys to that room. And the file cabinets had a separate key and documentation. But the transfer of information is no different now. It just happens to be digital. So you have to think of it that same way. I need to log into this stuff. I've got my personal information on there that I care about, which you should care about, things like your social security number and your birth date, because you can't change those. Now, you can get birth date information, but your social security number is a big deal. So I don't know, where does that reside? Well, probably here, probably there, retirement funds, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, have a really good password that you don't use anywhere else. I don't know how to do that. That's complicated. It's not. If you educate yourself on what that means and how to do that appropriately, that's a big step. Now, it's not the only step, because somebody can get your password specifically if they trick you, or if a trusted vendor, say PayPal or somebody that everybody's using, gets some sort of a breach on one of their servers and all the passwords are public. Well, that's not good. Yeah, can you change your password? Sure. But that's not fun either. That's not effective on remembering what a good, unique password is. Multi-factor authentication, right? It's to the point where it shows up on your phone when you log into something, and an alert comes up on your phone that says, "Hey, Derek, is this you?" And you say, "Yeah, it's me." Cool. So theoretically, right, the only way that person's going to then get into that information is if they, A, have your password, and they have a way of second factoring that it's you, which means they have to have your phone or go through a much more sophisticated attack to do that. People aren't using sophisticated attacks to get information right now. Cybersecurity is a problem, and information security is a problem because it's easy and it's lucrative, right? So if you go to the RSA conference, for example, and I'm paraphrasing, but 2 weeks ago, you know, I think Microsoft said something about 99% of the breaches that were reported were because multi-factor wasn't turned on. Literally turning something on. Start with people who handle critical information and work your way down. And those little tiny, that half a second of extra time is the difference between a company staying in business a lot of times and not. Yeah, we hear about Target. We hear about Yahoo. We hear about all these big, crazy, sexy breaches that everybody wants to talk about in the media. But no one reports on the little business that went out of business because they lost to a breach, because that's not good news, right? That's depressing, sad news. And nobody wants to report on that because it doesn't drive the craze of clicking on links and checking this out. So that's a big problem. And we are very passionate about, we don't want our clients to be in the news, right? We want them to survive. We want them to thrive. And we want their innovation and what they're doing to stay in place. And yeah, unfortunately, by not being in the news and not having anything crazy happen means that you have a good cyber program if you're doing it proactively.
Excellent. Now, certifications, we're going to kind of switch topics here a little bit. You know, there's a big shortage in the cybersecurity workforce today. It's kind of like a catch-22. There are a lot of people, you know, young out of college, or they're in the midst of a career transition. You know, they think they're ready. They want a career in cybersecurity, but companies don't want to hire them on because they don't want the cost or time spent training them. They only want seasoned, you know, professionals, but seasoned professionals like the CISO, they're getting burned out. So it's a, kind of another situation of a dog chasing its tail. So as a result, we're seeing certifications really explode now into the marketplace, and there's a whole laundry list of certifications out there that you could probably write a whole book on. Does Brilliant mm-hmm. help candidates, whether they're in college or in career transition, help get certified? And if so, what kind of certs do you help people get?
Yeah, that's a very good observation, a very good question. So it is a huge problem. There's no question. In a way, I guess the positive would be that the more people we can get excited about being in the information and cybersecurity world, the better. There's a huge shortage, absolutely. But it's also not just about being a hacker or being somebody in charge of a whole security department. You know, security information and cybersecurity goes all the way down to legal, right? I mean, law offices focus on this stuff. That's a big deal. Writing policy and procedures is boring to a lot of people, but it's the difference between being mature and being immature. And there's good money in that, to be honest. But the biggest thing when it comes to certifications is there's multiple ways to attack it. People retain information differently. To us, what we do and what we have done, a couple different things. We have brought on security people with a low level of certification, right? We want to grow them into being a security professional the way that we want them to help our clients. So we have a big military mindset. We have veterans on staff. You know, it's information security. 100 years ago, and we're fighting in wars, for example, they huddle in a tent, and the only people that know what that attack's going to be about are the ones that need to know. Right? Same with your information in your business. If Johnny Two Shoes doesn't need that information, don't give him access to it. That's how you stop breaches from happening, first and foremost. So when it comes to, you know, certifications, we have some educational material. We've made plenty of recommendations to people that are trying to get into the business. It depends. What do you want to do? And we used to be part of a couple organizations and nonprofits that were, you know, where do we start people? Well, you know, there's a lot of personality tests. That's a big deal. If you don't want to be a leader, then there's certain roles in security you don't want to be a part of. If you don't want to be a forward-facing problem solver, then there's certain roles in security that aren't going to be a good fit for you. There's a lot of technical roles within cybersecurity that are different than, say, information security, which goes on the more non-quote-unquote sexy side of things sometimes. So there's different ways. So I wouldn't say that we put a ton of value in exactly what kind of certifications you have. I do think that's very, very important when it comes to the offensive security and the penetration testing and specialization. It's a very prideful business. It means a lot. It doesn't mean everything, but it means a lot. So if there's people that are interested in getting to that, we have tons of resources. We don't necessarily put anybody through a rigorous training exercise in order to get them certified. We do work with some organizations that focus on veterans that want to get into it, and the military mindset is a natural fit for a lot of security roles. So we have some connectivity there. But yeah, we're very open to different types of mentalities and people, because at the end of the day, if you can't talk about security and you can't communicate effectively to a boardroom or your client or even internally at your own business, you know, there are certain roles you shouldn't be in. I mean, that's a big communication in managing this stuff is a big deal. So great question. I wish I had a great answer to that. I wish we had a division. Well, that's all we were doing. And maybe that will be part of our future. We do love to educate. But, it is a big problem, and we try to do everything we can to help solve that.
Okay. Well, it's a side question. When an employer looks at a candidate, you know, how much should a certification be your make or break when hiring a candidate? Yeah, I mean, I've interviewed other podcast guests. I mean, they've got, like, certifications longer than probably their resume. How much should that impress an employer? I mean, what does that – I mean, to you, if you're hiring somebody, is that a make or break when you hire an employee by their certifications?
No, not typically. It just depends. Again, it kind of depends on the role, right? So I always use the example of, do you know where your doctor went to college? Most people have no idea where their doctor went to school, and their doctor does a lot of things that most people don't do to you, right? So there is more to be said about, what do you know? how, you know, where was your background? Background's important too. I mean, you can go from a very technical background to a non-technical background and pull a lot of that information with you. And if you don't have certifications, some of the brightest people in this industry I know didn't even start out as technical security analysts, right? They might have been on even the business development side of things or maybe the software side of things, and they understand the importance of separation of duties. That's a big thing to us, like I mentioned right away. You know, information technology and IT is different than security. So it's not a deal breaker to us. Now, if it's a more senior level position, somebody who is going to be doing some of the more heavy duty engagements with us, specifically on the industry related. So DOD, of course, some certifications might help, but their background is going to be more important than pulling somebody from, let's say, the credit card world with PCI, payment card industry side. That might have some crossover, obviously, on protecting information, but is that the best person to have in this role? Maybe, maybe not. You can have certifications up and down, left and right. And again, to us, it's a people thing. If you don't fit the culture and you're not going to be somebody that we're prideful of having in front of a customer, I don't care what certification you have, it's not going to work in our mind. If you put the work in and you can articulate what your research have done for you and how that's helped you better understand the industry, then that's great. I mean, more power to you. We love that. And we put our analysts through ongoing maturity on certifications, whether they're starting out on the low level or they're, as you know, as you get into some heavier duty certifications, you have to keep them, right? You got to keep up to date. You got to continuously educate. And so not a deal breaker by any means for us. Again, I'm a big believer. It depends on the role. It depends on what their objective is going to be and what they're going to do before you, you have to worry about whether you're going to hire them or not based on their certifications.
Okay. Now let's go back to the compliance issues again. You know, we talked about GDPR and the CCP, and I think you had mentioned the DFARS. Can an organization mm-hmm. use your services at any point in time to become compliant with the DFARS and NIST 800-171 protocols?
Yeah, so well, let's focus on this. Yeah, so specifically to the Department of Defense and the DFARS, NIST 100-171, and now CMMC, we do have a very unique solution there. And it was built out of need. So we have a very robust background in the assessment and advisory and remediation planning and guidance to help businesses get done. So we do have a solution. It's called QuickTrack, C-U-I-C-K. So it's the controlled unclassified information is what we're talking about when we talk about the DFARS in CMMC. So it's called QuickTrack. It's a cute little name. TRAC actually stands for Training, Risk Assessment, Administration, and Controls. And we did that on purpose because that's the core of everything that we do. So when you talk about compliance, whether it's DOD or it's payment card industry, you know, or healthcare and HIPAA related stuff, it's in GDP. I mean, it's controls based programs at the end of the day, right? But somebody like NIST or somebody who is paid to go do the research they're not a governing body by any means, right? Their job is to say, hey, if you're going to make a wheel specifically this way, then these are the controls you have to meet in order to do it, because they've done the testing and the research on what's the best way to do that. So when it comes to one of the solutions that we do have, it's catered to small businesses. It is built for the NIST 800-171 controls. There's 110 of those, plus some additional CMMC ones on top that are already ingrained in map backable. That's a big thing. You have to be able to map out your compliance to specific controls. So you think about an auditor approach. We like that. A lot of people want to stay away from the auditor term. It's an audit. It's scary. It shouldn't be scary. If you're prideful in your work, then you should want to show it off and brag that you have the stuff done. If the DOD shows up tomorrow and you can show them that you have every control in place and you've kept it there for the last year and you are super mature with your security, they'll hug you, right? That means you're doing your duty as a supplier of the DOD to keep our attackers away and keep that information secured. So our QuickTrack solution is a combination of both the technical requirements and the non-technical requirements, as I was just mentioning, the documentation, the administration, the training, policy and procedure. We combine that with a technical solution enclave that meets the requirements for small businesses to utilize that so they don't have to put their whole business into scope. and they can keep costs down, and they can keep time and resources and management around having something, say, on-premise or up in some crazy expensive cloud. We've done it a little differently so that they can get an affordable, practical, and secure solution to keep making the cool stuff that they make for the warfighter. And that's the goal at the end of the day, is keep that information safe and keep these small businesses thriving.
Okay. Now, that kind of segues into another question I think that's going to be of hot importance to the United States here as well as other countries. You know, when people think of a cyber attack, they always think of attacks to the digital or the network IT infrastructure of a business, right? You know, like the servers, databases, mm-hmm. so forth. But people, I think, very often forget that include the physical assets of a business too, right? I mean, like your main entry access points, so forth. Now, there is also this intermediary in between called supply chain. Now, a while ago, I think late last year, I wrote a couple of blogs on how China was using, I think they were implanting, very miniature spy cameras, or I can't remember exactly, something surveillance related into the chips and microprocessors of servers that were being used by Google and Apple, I think, that were being shipped in their data centers. So now there is this risk of the supply chain, you know, where we're counting on, you know, things like, you know, countries like China to, you know, build the stuff for us, but we don't know what they're really putting into it, right? So how does your background with this fit into cybersecurity, and what is Beryllium trying to do to help mitigate this risk with supply chain management?
Yeah, we could go on and on for this for a long time. Supply chain risk management is just that. There's risk up and down the supply chain of any business, in any chain for that matter. Cyber is just the tip of the spear as one of the risks. Okay, there are other risks that go into making things or providing services if you're utilizing a chain of other businesses. And that is a huge deal. I don't care if you're making a car, which obviously is a huge deal because it carries human lives, or if you're making a trash can, right? You have risk to your business if it's not being done the best, most cost-effective, quality-driven, et cetera. So when you talk about the cyber risk, there are countries like China and others that want our stuff. If $600 billion with a B, $600 billion is leaving our intellectual property, is leaving our country every year. They want our stuff. Why? Because we got cool stuff. They have cool stuff too, but we do rely on other countries. That's economics, right? That's trying to make the world a better place. The problem is we have overlooked a lot of the evolvements of technology. Backends are being put into technology cameras and computers and phones, right? The phones don't just know about us because of marketing purposes. They know about us because they want to know about us. Data is money right now. It's worth more than oil. But so is our research and development, right? We pay big tax dollars to universities and such for research. We want to know look at the coronavirus stuff that's going on. I mean, imagine how much money people would be pouring in if they could take a time machine back a few months and say, we should spend a lot of money trying to figure out how to solve something like that, right? It's the same thing with how do we make better airplanes for our military? How do we make better softwares to make sure that, you know, simple ransomware attacks don't happen? How do we make schools more efficient? All that kind of stuff. And we spend a lot of time, obviously, with the DoD supply chain, but we have also spent a lot of time in the last, I'd say, 6 months with universities. They have research departments, and you can find these stories publicly now. Espionage is a big problem. There are some universities that take funding from foreign adversaries to write papers. But you know what else they're doing? DoD research. And guess what? Oh, that student's not even a real student, and they're working in that lab, and they're taking information and giving it to foreign nationals. I mean, that really is happening. People don't want to believe that because it's not reported in the news very much. But that's control. There are ways to keep insider threats from becoming a big deal. insider threat, just to touch on that quickly. I mean, think about that. That's a buzz term now, too. Insider threat can be a bunch of different things. It doesn't have to just be somebody who's trying to steal from you or somebody like is sitting in as a spy and taking your information. It can be somebody who's just behind in their work and they take information home with them and put it on their home network and they work from home for 6 hours and all of a sudden they get compromised at home. That's an insider threat because your business just gave up information, and that's not good to your brand. It's not good to your shareholders. It's not good to your employees. It also people who are disgruntled. There's a lot of people that don't make as much money as they think they should who have no allegiance to their business. They don't care. They frankly don't care about what they do on a day-to-day basis. That's a problem, too. You have to protect that kind of stuff. So from a supply chain standpoint, you have to know your suppliers. You have to know what sort of information are they giving you, what information are you giving them, and what level of criticalness is that to your business but also the chain that you're a part of. Nobody wants to be a vulnerability in a supply chain. So when it comes to cyber specifics, I'm telling you it's happening every single day right now, specifically because of the CMMC. The question is, do you have this stuff in place? I don't care if you have a certification yet, which you can't get yet, but do you have this stuff into place? And if people say, no, we're working on it, people are saying, you're a vulnerability. I'm not working with you until you have that done. I don't want to be the one that's responsible for breaking the chain. And that's, I don't care if that's DOD or if that's in a different part of business. That's a big deal. I've done some work in a previous life, and I mentioned my global logistics with – I was a part of a team that worked with a company who made a car. And I won't mention them by name, but they were trying to build a car, but they weren't a car maker, right? They're a technology company. Building a car is very difficult when you're doing it differently than everybody else. But – you have to have a supply chain risk management mentality, not an engineering mindset, because problems are always going to exist. Threats are always going to be there, whether it's a tire blows out on a truck or weather happens and it shuts down, a virus breakout happens and now people are shutting down, right? That's a risk to a business so that you're not shutting down a line. Bottom line, reputation, all that kind of stuff. And cyber is just part of it. And if we can get people's mindset around the risk management side of it, then they're in a much, much better place when it comes to looking at the rest of their business. They shouldn't have to be cybersecurity experts. That's what we do, right? They shouldn't be information security experts. That's what we do. We want them to focus on being a great business and keeping it that way. And that's where we spend a lot of our time with our clients.
Excellent. Now, back to Beryllium again. Now, there's tons of, cybersecurity, vendors out there here in the U.S. I think last count was probably well over 2,000. What separates Beryllium from the rest of the crowd? Why, like, for example, why should I come to you and say, hey, Derek, I want your services versus these other many thousands of other vendors? What makes you different? What makes you stand out from the rest of the crowd?
Good question. It's cliche, but we care. We really do give a rip about our clients, and we don't want what we absolutely makes us not sleep well at night is when we see businesses build an ineffective plan off of lack of knowledge, lack of understanding what is important to their business. And you can have what looks like a great plan and execute on it, but if you don't do it correctively, it's almost going back in time if you think about it. So we really like to get granular. We do. We don't want to just come in and assess a bunch of, like I said early on, against a bunch of controls that don't make sense to your business. If you're a small business, let's say, and you don't handle health information and you don't handle credit card information or DOD information, but you have information that you don't want other people to have, then let's talk about that. Let's pick out the right framework for you. Maybe it's a subset of a couple different NIST frameworks, right? Let's figure out what's applicable to your business and what is the best to. And we are big believers in you need to identify the right program and then work towards accomplishing that. Because once you do that, as I mentioned a handful of times already, I feel like a broken record, but it's true, is that once you identify the right path because you know what's critical to your business and then you accomplish that goal, you can build upon that effectively. A lot of people think I'm compliant with this because I bought all these things and I plugged all this stuff in and I'm paying attention to that. I'm good to go. That's not the case. We know that in 6 months, if an update comes out from Microsoft and you have to do this, or legacy equipment has to be pulled off the network and people are just not doing it, threats are still going to evolve. And if you're not paying attention to that, then you're going to fall behind. And that's where we really, really spend a lot of time. And we're not a drop it and forget it. We're not a, hey, we're going to assess you every year, see in 11 months, come back and say, you haven't done anything, but you're still going to pay us. So that's not our fault to do your job. We're not doing that. We want to make sure that you are doing a cost-effective, secure approach that's realistic for your business and that you can prove that you have it, because the day is coming where everybody's going to ask about your security maturity. I want to do business with you, but I do not want my information to end up in the wrong hands. Can you show me how you're going to protect my data and my business so that we can do cool things together? And man, what a powerful thing to be able to say, look at this. Here's the proof. Here's the progress we've made. Here's our goals for the next, you know, 6 quarters and how we're going to get this done. We care about you. Let's do business together, and here's how we're going to protect it. I mean, that's very powerful in our minds, and that's what we really want to get people's mindsets around.
Excellent. Now, do you have any client testimonials or any case studies you could share with us that you can, without getting into too many details, obviously?
Boy, there's a lot of stories I could tell you, both good and bad. Not so much that it had any implications with us. As you can imagine, there's attacks all over the place. We have a slew of clients that are proactive. We absolutely love those that have the right lens on. They're looking at this through the right microscope, because they understand the importance of it. We've had a lot of clients. I shouldn't say a lot, but in the last year specifically, with these GDPRs and with the CCPAs and the CMMC and all these kind of more focused compliance-driven programs, we've seen a lot of businesses kind of call us out of fear. And the fear usually is, I'm in trouble, I haven't been doing what I should be doing, or I've been putting this off. Or the fear is, I don't want to lose business, so how do I validate that I have all the hard work that I've done is proven? But, you know, so as you can imagine, the bigger the organization, typically the more dysfunction there is in that business. If you've got a CISO, if you have a chief information security officer, and you have a chief information officer and a chief technical officer and a CFO and a CEO and presidents of branches, you can imagine the disconnect on people that will be in that organization, because they all see risk differently. A CFO sees risk differently than a CISO will, and a CIO sees risk differently than a CISO will. So that collaboration is important, because what happens, and it happens all the time, is that they run around the way, right? It just goes in circles. Nothing gets done. And we've seen bad cases of that where, you know what, as you mentioned right away, and I appreciate that comment early on, that people don't pay attention really until something bad happens. We see it way too often, and it's because they just can't agree, and they have dysfunction. So some of the testimonials that we have, we've gotten some really, really cool feedback from our clients that have written emails to us about how much time they've spent trying to study NIST, for example. I was brought on to focus on the NIST framework and what we're trying to comply with. I thought I knew this stuff, but man, once I talked to Beryllium and I dive deeper, I understand the risk is on me. I'm the one in charge of this. And if something bad happens, and heaven forbid it's China hacks into them and takes their information and they're in the news, you know, that could end up hurting human lives, right? Let me take it that to the extreme. That could be an attack against us based on that information somehow or whatever. And I got to live with that for the rest of my life? I don't think so. So, you know, a lot of those stories about, man, I'm glad we worked with experts, and I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back here, but that is how the security world needs to work, is collaboration and together with subject matter expertise. We've also had some people lose business because they haven't had the requirements in place. And I'll use specifically the DFARS clause. That's been a law for a couple of years, excuse me, and we've had some prime contractors, excuse me, that will go to their customers and say, can you show me your progress report? Can you actually show me that you're getting this stuff done? And they'll say, well, you know, we're working on it. And, well, not good enough. Our contract's coming up. We're going to give that business to somebody else. Well, for business development people and those that care about growing the business, that's not a good scenario. as you can imagine. And so they've utilized our QuickTrack solution, for example, or gone through, you know, an engagement where we not only just assess, but help them remediate and find the right solutions that, that get their requirements into place. And then you know what they do? They call back and they say, hey, I've got this. I didn't have to spend $300,000 on it, but I have my requirements in place. Please let me know when you're ready to give us business again. And we have multiple instances where you know what they say? Good timing, because the people we gave that business to don't have it either. So thank you for being proactive and getting this done and meeting the requirements, and then they've gotten the business back. And we're talking over millions of dollars in business coming back to the business because they invested the right way, the smart way, and got compliance in place and kept it there and meet requirements. That's the kind of stuff that we need to hear about, and that's what makes us sleep better at night, is that we're keeping the attacks away, we're keeping businesses moving forward. But yeah, it's not something in the DoD space that you read a lot about, because it's just not a story that a lot of people want public. But yeah, we have case studies. We've got people that love talking about being proactive and securing information because they care about their brand, they care about their employees, they care about their customers. And that's more important than the bottom line a lot of times, because if you have that stuff in place, your business should be in pretty good shape, and you have competitive advantages at that point. And that's very, very key to business these days.
Derek, I want to bring up another point that you've talked about before, and that's the customer and customer service. It's very, very refreshing for me to hear that, because I think you're the only second person that I've had a podcast with a guest that's actually talked about just delivering great customer service. There are so many cybersecurity vendors out there. In fact, probably I'd say 90. I'll even put my neck out and say there's probably 90% of them. All they get caught up in all this jargon, you know, and what they can, you know, and trying to, you know, impress the customer, you know, with all these acronyms and all these various technologies and all these, like, you know, methodologies, this, that, blah, blah, blah. But why can't cybersecurity vendors just focus on the one thing that's important to them is delivering great customer service? I just feel that this industry is getting so, it's a technological industry, obviously, but we're just getting so wrapped up in the technology. I think we're losing sight of this good old thing called customer service. Why can't the industry now start embracing that? You know, enough of the technology stuff. You know, we need to talk about the customer. I mean, that's the lifeblood, right, of any business, really. Can you expand more on that?
Yeah, this is just my personal opinion, but one of the biggest problems is greed. You're right, it's a technology-driven world now, and everybody wants what's the coolest and greatest thing, right? Think of your cell phone. The original iPhone is a paperweight, right? But it was cool, so we're going to buy it. And the Tesla Motors, same way. You know, the first Tesla was, that's kind of old school now, but these new ones are great, right? And when it comes to security, it's really not that different. It's how many people can we sell this to? How much money can we make? We want to get acquired, you know. We want which is okay, right? I mean, everyone's got their goals, but you know, how do we get as much of this specifically on some kind of a subscription model where they have to pay us every month? And maybe they'll forget they're paying us. Who knows? It's a huge problem, and unfortunately, when it comes to, and this is why we choose to go a little bit different path, is that people make cool things. There are really cool solutions out there, and ones that aren't greedy, ones that solve great problems at a really good price, and they do provide a good level of customer service. That's important. But when you're talking about security, as you kind of mentioned earlier, it's not just something that you just plug in, right? You don't just magically become a secure company overnight. So we are in the service industry. When you're in cybersecurity and information security on our side, right, you do have to provide a good and great level of service. A lot of times with software companies or security solutions that are technology driven, that go above and beyond, say, a managed service, because a managed service definitely has to have good customer service because you're paying them a monthly fee to do their job. Well, with software as a service, for example, or SaaS products, we do have a little bit of a problem, and there's nothing wrong with it necessarily every case with who is my point of contact? I like this demo. This looks like a cool thing. So I install it and I use it, but whose quote unquote neck am I going to ring if something goes wrong, right? Who do I turn to if I don't know how to get it to turn back on? I call this person, and if it's a 23-year-old kid out of college who's just trying to make a buck, they're more worried about just selling it a bunch of times than they are actually having it work. And some business models are absolutely built that way because they have to be, but how do you really vet that solution? How do you really know that someone's got your back if an auditor comes knocking at your door or a customer who says, I want to give you $50 million in business, but I'm not doing it until you can show me X, Y, and Z? The way to get around that is to work with experts. I hate to sound cliche on that, but it really is understanding what are you getting? What are you investing in? That's an education piece. If 50% of your business and your employees are going to have to do things a little bit differently to secure information, for example, by putting in an extra step or two into their policy and procedure, then they have to know why that is. And you're not going to get that from a lot of big box enterprise solutions or even smaller solutions that are just plug this in and turn it on. There are, again, I will say there are plenty of solutions out there that are great. We like working with them. That's what we're always looking for. What is solving a great problem? Ransomware attacks, for example. There are some solutions that are starting to come to market that do a really, really awesome job at essentially preventing ransomware attacks from happening. I mean, if we can solve that problem, we're in pretty good shape. So that kind of stuff is important. But to answer your question, I don't know the best way to get around that outside of working with an expert who can explain to you the difference between vendors A, B, and C and how they do meet things or don't meet things and what it's going to mean to your business. And, it's definitely a huge problem that we face in the security world.
Wow. Well, this segues to another related question. As you know, I am a content generator, I guess, for the cybersecurity industry, and I'm a tech writer. Mm-hmm. And I try to make my content, that's vendor neutral, and I try to, focus on the information that brings value to the average American consumer, or business, like the mom-and-pop
yep.
stores. I when I write a blog post, I just don't simply regurgitate the five top things, an IAM strategy should do or whatever. I look at the headlines.
Yeah.
Try to look at what's timely, relate my experiences to it, and then say, hey, this is, I think, what you guys should be doing. Now, have we lost sight of the fact that, this is all information and that there's just so much of noise out there, it's hard for the customer to really even know what's for real and what's for not? I know you emphasize information. I do too. I think it's a great thing. But how can we now bring that word information, take all the noise out of it, and make it actually relevant to the customers to what they need?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a believer that we're on a better path. I think generational differences make a difference when it comes to the general population understanding what is a risk and what is a threat. For example, I always kind of joke and say, if you want to know how quickly a business can get taken down, hire people of my parents' age, right? They didn't grow up with a ton of technology. They're adapting to it. That's fine. And a lot of them have done a good job at that, but we were all taught the same things, right? Click on a link. Well, oh, that's cool. I can just click on this and then the information's right there. Man, what an idea. Or remember when you didn't even have a username or a password back, not even that long ago, right? I mean, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do I need a username for? It's my slide. And it was, what do I need a password for? Well, I suppose I get that makes sense. And so I'll just do a 1, 2, 3, 4. And then all of a sudden it was more characters. And then it was, well, you got to do this. And I need a password for everything. I'll just, all that kind of stuff. We're all raised the same way within the technology advancements. Now, that said, the younger generation, those that are into their teenage years and into college and into the workforce have had technology their whole lives for the most part, right? So there's hope there that if we do it right from an education, from an early on standpoint, and I'm talking parents that have kids that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, that they are educated as parents on the risks and what data means to you, because it is more valuable than oil, as I mentioned. So it's your information. We all social media. Everybody loves social media for the same reason. You got to connect with people without having to see their face. You got to find out what they're doing. They're going to Disney World. They're doing that. That's great. Well, now it's a lot of people are starting to change their minds. Like, I don't really think I want everybody to know everything about me. And the attackers are using that, right? They're getting the information that you're giving out publicly and using it against you. So we have to educate our kids. And as you know, I've got young kids myself, and as of course they get the education because I work in the industry, but as they educate forward, we do a lot of work with K-12, you know, with schools and universities, like I mentioned, and it is about evolving our understanding of this stuff. And in order to keep it, like you said, top of mind, I love it when I see journalism done the way it's supposed to be. Is I don't want to just hear about the breach that's making the news. I want to hear, and I'm not just saying me, Derek, in the security world. But I'm talking, I think the consumer should want to know what happens. Like, what caused the breach? But more importantly, what was being done prior to that? We did a really, really cool special last fall with a university, a private university here in the Twin Cities, and it was done in collaboration. They were fully in on it, but they really wanted to know, and using this as an example, they wanted to know their effectiveness. So they work on security, and they've got a security vendor, they got people, they got staff, and but you know, like, how vulnerable are we? Do we really know how vulnerable we are against attacks that are happening today? So we collaborated with one of our key collaborators, and the news came with us for this, and we did some very basic ways to get into their information, physically getting into their server room right in front of students, right? We did some things to see, hey, is the security guard paying attention? I mean, stupid stuff that, of course, they're paying attention. That's good. That's an effective – that means that you already passed the test of that. Not everybody's walking in with a lockpick kit on their hip, right? The real attackers, you got to start with the basics before you get to the advanced. Well, what happened is that they did stop some attacks by putting security controls in place, but they also didn't stop some attacks on stuff that they knew were vulnerabilities. They didn't finish their deployments. They didn't think about this area. We ended up with the president's information without even targeting them. You know, that kind of stuff. That's eye-opening stuff. Well, how do you fix that? You fix that by education. You fix that by continuously assessing, but not just assessing to assess, but assess to build a plan and execute the plan and train your people and understand what the threats look like and then retest against those same attack vectors. That's a big thing, right? So I might be able to know that your window is open to your house. It doesn't mean that your back door is not unlocked too. So don't just shut the window. Go around, check the house and make sure that your kids don't leave the window open the next night again. Then that was your vulnerability. Put some controls around that. So we did that. It was a really cool two-night special, and I encourage people to look that up. You can find that through care11.com. But it's a really cool example of what it means to understand this stuff, that the students there understand it, right? And when we go talk to elementary schools about cyberbullying and stuff like that, I mean, they have to understand that as they evolve, their information is already out there. And we know that through the Cambridge Analytica breaches and stuff, how many data sets there are, data points for each person, how it's used against us. But that's yours. That's your information. You should be prideful of that. And just like a business should be prideful of what they do, you know, understand this stuff. Think about what you're doing. Do you really need to say that online? Do you really? It's just like I always say, you know, how people interact on social media is no different than road rage. You're driving down the car, somebody cuts you off, and we all go, what are you doing? And you get all mad. Well, if that person was sitting next to you on a park bench, would you be that mad? Probably not. Just like you don't have to make that comment and share that information about you online and get heated up about stuff. Because if we were sitting face-to-face in a room, we'd just agree to disagree or talk it out, right? And that's a big, big difference between our younger generation and our older generation. And my hope, and I do believe that if we do it right and the news coverage, like I said, gets down to the details of what happened, how could it have been prevented, what did they do short? It's okay to admit what you did wrong because now you know, and it's unfortunate that something happened. Maybe others will learn from that, right? Maybe other people see that story and go, ugh. Maybe we should find out where we're at so that we don't just assume that we're good to go and then find out that that's an expensive decision that we were wrong on. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm hoping, and I love content writers like you. I like that mentality of focusing on what's kind of like not sexy in a way and get that message out there and try to get that to be more aware of what needs to be done. I do believe that's doable.
Okay, excellent. Now let's segue into the cybersecurity threat landscape in general, into the industry. Just a few questions here. What are your thoughts on artificial intelligence? You know, that's a big buzzword now.
I think when it comes to AI, it's such a crazy buzz term right now. I think there's some really, really cool technologies, and a lot of people want to call artificial intelligence when it's not really artificially intelligent. It's still being taught how to learn by certain things, but as that evolves, I think there's great places for it. I do. I think there's a lot of risk in it. I don't think we know enough about exactly what we're using it for. I think that's very, very obvious with some of the wealthiest people on the planet are pulling their money together to make sure that we control it, for example. I see a lot of benefits in it, and I see it's a natural progression, but I just think that if we can get security in mind first and foremost, then I'm far less skeptical of technology advancement. The initial technology wave was not about security. It was about how much easier can I make things for people's lives, right? It's not privacy, it's simpleness, right? And how do we make something more make you somehow more busy but less busy at the same time? That kind of mentality, I think, is changing a little bit. So hopefully, within the artificial intelligence and AI world, and machine learning world, that we're going to get ahead of that. That's my hope.
Okay. Now, what are your thoughts on, like, cybersecurity risk insurance policy? Now, obviously, you know, you've done a lot of work with compliance issues like GDPR, CCPA. Mm-hmm. Cybersecurity insurance policies are now becoming a big thing, too. Has Beryllium done any work in that area for clients, or do you give advice or any consulting or anything?
Yeah. That's an excellent question and one that does not get talked about very often. So thank you. Cyber insurance is, you got to be careful. That's the number one thing. Back to the risk comment, right? The risk discussion that we just had. An insurance company is not going to give you a ton of money and cover you for being negligent. Okay, so if they're not just going to give you a blanket huge coverage on you just operating the way that you have been. The good ones, in our opinion, are cyber policies that really are built around, are you compliant with a specific framework? Do you do the training and awareness on a frequent basis? And those that lay that out and say, look, you meet the requirements of HIPAA, or you meet the requirements of NIST 100-171. You have a mature cyber company. You are less of a liability to us as your insurance provider, your cyber insurance provider. We will give you a larger premium. There are some good organizations out there that are doing this at a very, very, very affordable rate for small businesses. It does not need to be catastrophic to them. But again, if I'm just my personal opinion, I'm not going to provide you a security blanket, if you will, knowing that you're acting immaturely. So we do have some partners in place that we make introductions to all the time. But again, the conversation has to be, don't use cyber insurance as an excuse that you're covered, because you're not. You might get some money back from XYZ because of this and that, maybe. But does anybody really want to go through that? No. Be compliant. Be mature with your cyber hygiene. Get an insurance policy in place to coverage any kind of crazy something that's out of your control. Maybe, yes, there are policies out there. We love it if people take that approach. Absolutely love that.
Okay, excellent. Now, we keep hearing about nation-state threat actors. Okay, China, Russia, you know, who else is out there? We keep hearing about that. And then now there's this thing called deep fake technology. I don't know if you've heard of that or not, where artificial intelligence we use, like, imitate a political candidate, use as a phishing scheme to donate money to the offshore account. Have you done any work with deep fake technology or anything like that? Or what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's going to be a big menace in these elections coming up here in November?
We don't do work with it directly by any means. Again, to us, I think that's a big, isn't a big education piece, because people believe what they see and hear, and I don't even think the phrase people believe what they read anymore, because people don't seem to read anything more than a headline, or they just want to watch videos. And absolutely, attackers and manipulators and influencers are going to try to utilize whatever they can, and one of that is going to be deepfakes. Yep, you're going to have President Trump, or you're going to have Joe Biden, or whoever, or somebody from an adversary is going to utilize a way to get more power by stirring up a conversation by using this. It looks just like them, sounds just like them. And they said that, I'm enraged. And absolutely that's going to be a problem. And again, it goes back to, you have to understand what you're doing when you're online, when you're doing research. Go to trusted people and sources to get information. It doesn't mean you need to stick with what you agree with. But, yeah, you see it all the time. This is one of the things that we are very aware of when it comes to, don't be the first person to comment. Be the first person to comment correctly. And you'll see that with everything from the CMMC process to a story that breaks about something catastrophic that happened to somebody. Well, is that true? I mean, is it really going to change my life if I just wait a couple days to see if I get the whole story? We see this with breach news all the time. This thing just happened. Oh, my gosh, the world's coming to an end. Well, let's let that play out a bit. What really happened? Oh, maybe somebody didn't hack into it. Maybe somebody maliciously just took it out of the business because they were mad, right? Like, let it play out. I think with the election-related stuff, I mean, all we hear about is securing the election. Again, the attacks are evolving. We have to understand what is the most important part about securing the election. Do we have to go back to hard copy voting? Maybe. And that's certainly an easier way to protect it from a physical standpoint. Is it as efficient? No, it's not convenient. But, yeah, I think that is going to be something that people should keep an eye on and be familiar with. We do share a lot of that information. This technology exists. People are going to try to utilize, manipulate your mindset. If you haven't seen that The Great Hack, I think it's called, on Netflix, which gets into the Facebook and Cambridge Analytica breach. It's a great documentary. It's a documentary, so buyer beware. But it really does kind of start talking about that kind of stuff, right? Like, how influenced am I? And then once you start understanding it, you start looking at what you see on social media or in your email feeds, and it's kind of scary. It definitely is. So I think that deepfake stuff is going to be an interesting development over the next couple of years for sure.
Excellent. Okay. Well, just two more questions then before we get our show wrapped up here. The Internet of Things is going to be a huge thing down the road here. And honestly, I find the Internet of Things to be a very, very scary proposition. I don't like the fact that all my devices are going to be connected together. That only just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker, right? And none of these points of connection are actually secured. If I remember correctly, it's all done by RFID wireless connections, which are unencrypted. I find it scary. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I mean, I still drive like an old Civic from 2003. Like my financial advisor, he has like this James Bond car. I mean, he claps his hand and, the damn car backs up from an open store. So what are your thoughts on the IoT? Do you have a smart home or a smart car or anything like that? Or what do you feel about IoT in general? And the security risk?
I completely understand. And that could be a whole another podcast at the end of the day, really, because I specifically, just speaking personally here, when you work in the security world, you become naturally paranoid, if that's the right way. But I'm not against convenience. I'm not against technology advancement. No, nobody is at Beryllium, and a lot of people in our industry aren't necessarily against that. But you do have to consider, what convenience are you adding and what are you giving up from a privacy standpoint? So do I need a refrigerator where my grocery list is on a flat screen TV on the door? Probably not. I mean, I think I can use a whiteboard that's on a magnet, that kind of, do I need a toaster that tells me my toast is almost done, or can I just wait for it to ding and pop up like it has been for the last 60 years? That kind of stuff. Again, back to what we kind of talked about earlier, people want what's cool and what's new. A lot of those products weren't built with security in mind. They were built with convenience in mind. I think that's changing a little bit because I think brand reputation matters. You think about the Nest cameras and some of those baby monitors. That's a that's a scary thing, right? We're starting to see more of those stories, kind of back to that journalism point, diving deeper. Like, what is the problem? Is the product defective and not secure, or is it the network that's connected to? So, yeah, if you want smart devices in your house, every one that you add is another layer of risk that you have to mitigate. So can it be done? Yes, absolutely. Can you set up, is it simple? Not always for everybody, obviously, based on your technology background. But if you wanted to have things connected to your house, you've got Netflix and you've got smart TVs and smart this, there are ways to do that, right? There are ways to maybe put those on a separate network. That's what the DoD and a lot of high-level experts are saying, is that put those on a separate network that don't actually connect to the main internet network of yours, and let them kind of reside on their own. Because if somebody gets in, what are they going to be able to do, right? Maybe change your channel, and if you don't want people looking at you, don't connect cameras in your house. That's inevitable. We see it with doorbells. Everyone's basically got a camera pointing at them now. How are we securing that? We could go on and on. We don't allow the smart speakers in our house, only because I think it's fairly obvious that that is always listening and it is computing. And frankly, I don't think that information is important. If I need to find something, I can do it on my phone in 30 seconds, which probably is also listening on a regular basis. But we shut a lot of those features off. We don't see the convenience in that yet. And I understand why some people might, but at the end of the day, you have to be aware of what you're bringing into your personal lives, for your personal security, for your work security. And if you don't have a grip on that, that's the first thing we talked about in our conversation today, is if you don't have a grip on that, then you're at risk. And there's no one really at fault at it but you. And you can't point fingers at anybody anymore, because there are ways to get stuff secured, and it's up to you to do it.
Okay, as we wrap up our show now, just two last questions, I promise. What do you think the biggest cybersecurity threat is going to be this year, and or for that matter, into the coming decade? And what's your laundry list, finally, of your top tips that you tell the businesses, or your clients for that matter, of what they can do to mitigate the risk of being a victim? Now, obviously, we all can become a victim. But what do you tell people what they can do to, like, protect their passwords, protect their personal identifiable information, so forth and so forth?
Yeah, I do think, what's actually the threat and what you read about in the news are probably two different things this year. Obviously, the election is going to be a huge focus from a security standpoint, and that's always a threat, right? If economic power can be gained by somebody else's influence, that's always a problem. I do think that one of our bigger threats is going to be as technology does get better and security does get more in place, I think there is going to be a larger attack on the people. So they're going to still try to get, and this will never stop as long as people still handle information themselves. I think a lot of attacks are going to be through manipulation and social engineering. So whether that's through emails that are far more sophisticated than the Arabian Prince, the old school way, I think it's that phone calls are becoming more important. Text messaging are becoming more common. Social media messages are becoming more common. People are busy, and it's easy to fall into those traps. We just have to be very aware of that. And other countries are getting more creative. There's no question about it. I think some of the threats that we face are strictly that. They want information from you. So it's yours, and you should care about it and protect it. And what we always tell people is anything that you log into that you wouldn't allow a person sitting next to you on the bus or the subway look at, you need to protect. And that starts with basics. The password, like a unique password. So your Facebook password is not the same or even remotely close to the one you use for your bank, that you use for your retirement services, that you use for work. It has nothing to do with you personally. You have to just figure out ways to have a passphrase, for example. And I'm not saying that that's going to stop every brute force attack where people are guessing your passwords or using some sort of a software to scrum the dark web for passwords, but make them unique. Make them long and make them unique. And that's always step one, because that's the first thing that hackers are looking for, is your password. Second thing is going to be multi-factor authentication, like we talked about. There are great solutions out there that are free. You know, Google has one, Duo Multi-Factor. We're big fans of them. I think they have solutions that are free for under 10 users, so a lot of families could use that. Small businesses could use that, really. That again, is not – I think they did a Duo did an RSA video presentation live in front of people on how quickly an administrator for a business could get an IT administrator could get Duo set up for somebody within 3.5 minutes, right? I mean – those basics, you got to start with the basics, and every layer that you can add to information that you don't want, every layer of security that you can add, makes it more difficult for the attacker. And if you think about how a typical burglar goes around, a petty theft burglar in a neighborhood, where do they go? They go for the easy targets. They go for the houses that don't have a lot of lights, that don't have a fence, that don't have a barking dog. They've got their windows open. They've got computers sitting by the window, and they pop a screen out, and they grab and they run. That's the majority of the kind of threats that we're facing here. So if you are concerned about that and you think that your house, quote unquote, is okay, what happens if something bad happens? Well, they may have come in and stole some things from you. Okay. Put a fence up. Okay. Maybe not realistic. Get a beware of dog sign. That could be something simple, right? Check your doors and locks, put a motion light in. Those are the kind of things that when we talk about information security and cybersecurity, start with training, start with awareness. We have partners that do that, specifically one right really close to us. And then focus on those simple next steps that you can do before you start diving in head first into how do I stop an artificial intelligence threat. Don't start there. Be good first before you become great. And if you're basic, that's okay. Understand it and get better.
Okay. Well, Derek, we thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I think it was a great podcast. You had shed a lot of information about Berlin, what you do. And I think what the refreshing takeaway here is that we just kind of need to go back and just kind of, and at least in cybersecurity, kind of go back the old-fashioned ways of just delivering good old customer service, right? And just sharing information that's just doesn't have a lot of noise. That's what the customer needs to know. So we thank you so much for your time, and we hope to having you again in the future.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a great conversation. And anytime you want to do it again, you just let me know. I could talk about this stuff for days. You've asked great questions. I know you're very passionate about this too, and that's the stuff that we love to hear. So I really do appreciate the time.
Well, if you have time, I'd like to have you back on tomorrow. No, it's okay. anyway, all right. Well, we'll sync up again. We'll have another great podcast here in another month or so, okay?
Awesome. Thank you, Robbie. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Derek. Take care. Bye.
Bye.